This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
I'm Gabriel Gatehouse, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Series 2 of The Coming Storm. There's a divide in American politics between those who think democracy is in peril and those who think it's already been subverted, hollowed out from the inside. As America prepares to elect its next president, we go through the looking glass into a world where nothing is as it seems, and the institutions of the state are a facade. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is
The Stephen Nolan Show!
So, the Education Minister meeting with the LCC yesterday, the Loyalist Community Council, will spell out in the show what the controversy is around that and whether Paul Given should have been meeting with the LCC or not. It's a pretty feisty show this morning.
The Stephen Nolan Show!
Good morning. Northern Ireland is a messed up place, and at the same time, it's a great place to live, to work, to bring up your children. One of the biggest challenges to this place is that if we as a community, we as a society, do not challenge the norms because it's always been the norm. So when, for example, it's our First Minister, Michelle O'Neill, saying that there was no alternative to violence of the past, what message does that send out to children of the present who are potentially getting sucked in to paramilitary violence, to paramilitary gangsterism, to crime, and thinking that that is in some way could ever be justifiable? And it's about the messaging that our political leaders give. So this morning, we're looking at the Education Minister, Paul Given. What is our Education Minister doing? Meeting up, having talks with the Loyalist Community Council, which includes, not solely, but includes representatives for the UDA, the UVF and the Red Hand Commando. So our Education Minister is meeting up with a body which includes representatives who kneecap people, who deal drugs with people, who try to suck children into a life of gangsterism. They're actively trying to recruit young people in our community. So Paul Given, what are you doing? Why would you do this? What message does it send out to a 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old young loyalist in one of these communities that sees these gangsters with their big cars and, you know, what's in their boot? Drugs. That sees these gangsters wheeling bricks through windows of people in their own community because of the colour of their skin. What, Paul, are you doing meeting up with the Loyalist Community Council? This goes beyond the Education Minister. This goes to the leader of the DUP, Gavin Robinson. Gavin, you've said that there's a new start for your political party and you're dealing with bread and butter issues. Well, one of the bread and butter issues in this country is about paramilitaries and how we free ourselves from them. So, Gavin, what is your party? Why is your party at all interested in meeting a body which includes people that are representatives for the UVF, UDA, Red Hand Commando? And I said it this morning. The reports are that the Department of Education, well, it's not a report, it's a fact. The Department of Education says the minister met the LCC to discuss a range of issues relating to education in loyalist areas. Why? Do you not want to meet hardworking, decent parents that are struggling? Do you not want to meet? Is there no benchmark here? So a group which includes paramilitary thugs now has access to our Education Minister. Now, Paul Given could argue he voted against the Belfast Agreement. Our education minister could very much point to our first minister saying there is no alternative to IRA violence. He could very much point to the educational underachievement that there is in loyalist areas. But can we just shrug our shoulders and say, well, that's the norm? These people were released from prison. They're still transitioning. To Gavin Robinson this morning, what benchmark, Gavin, what bar are you putting in terms of anybody that associates itself at all with gangsterism, with killing people, with seducing young people and old into a life of drugs? How far do you, as a new leader of the party, push your party away from those paramilitaries? And look, I get it. It's complicated. I get it that in Northern Ireland we have many people who have a past related to gangsterism and killing and murder, who are in positions of power and authority in our country. But this discussion's got to be had. Chris Donnelly, former candidate for Sinn Féin, commentator with us this morning. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Of course, it would be unfair just to focus on the Education Minister, Paul Given, this morning. This is a question for Northern Ireland, for Sinn Féin, how they talk about violence, and all of us.
I don't think that's actually the key issues here. I mean, I know you talked about their almost like the leadership in this society and where we're traveling. And fair enough, I take that point. But there's something specific about what happened, I think, which we need to focus on. And that's the education minister in that capacity, Stephen, decided to meet the LCC yesterday. That was very unwise. And I can tell you why, for two reasons. What happened immediately afterwards? Well, the chairperson of the LCC, David Campbell, used the platform afforded to him by the education minister to call for the minister to use his influence to halt plans for an Irish language primary school in East Belfast. So immediately, a vulnerable fledgling school community was put in the spotlight. A voice, you know, and who was doing that? Somebody who represents, who's a representative of the group, you know, a group that has been quite controversial, the Loyalist Communities Council. We know, and you articulated the reasons there, Stephen, who this group represents. Now, that's something that's going to cause anxiety to people who are involved in setting up this fledgling school community. So that's unwise, number one. And I think that needs rebutted immediately to say, you know, bluntly, who the hell is David Campbell to get involved in a matter like that, which shouldn't interest him at all? People across the society, Stephen, there are schools of different sectoral backgrounds coexisting. I'm a principal of one of them. We work together for the betterment of our kids. Parents, regardless of their background, will make the decision about which school they want to send their child to, enroll their child in, for various reasons. That's their right.
But this is about...
But no one should be threatened merely by the existence or location of schools. And unfortunately, by Paul Given's actions yesterday, he gave somebody who I don't think has a positive agenda here, to be blunt, a platform to essentially, you know, have a go at this school community. And I don't think that's right.
Well,
the education minister to send out.
Well, David Campbell is entitled to convey what he believes are the views of the community that he says he understands what their views are about that school. But you've just said that you're a school principal. So let's go with that. What do you tell your children if any of them ever asked about the IRA?
Well, that is,
as a former Sinn Féin election candidate, what would you say to a young person that comes up to you, you're in education, and says, was there an alternative to violence in the past? What do you tell them?
What I would do as an educationalist is what educationalists everywhere do. You don't tell children. You tell children to find out themselves, they're involved in education. And I've taught before in university.
But if they said, is Michelle O'Neill right, what would you say?
Well, I would tell them it's something they would have to make up their own mind, look at the research, do their own studying on these matters. I mean, I know you set up to say at the start, oh, that Michelle O'Neill, by saying that, was somehow acting in a way on, you know, saying something about violence that is almost unheard of. Stephen, in this society, people will argue that the state of Northern Ireland being created was an act of injustice, of violence in itself. And there's many people march to celebrate and commemorate that. Many people march and commemorate battle victories in the past, you know, going back centuries. But, you know, I don't think that's really, I mean, people in this society are increasingly at peace with having a difference about what happened in the past. We can agree to disagree about the past, where people have drawn a line, and they've done it for 25 years now, we're 25 years from the Good Friday Agreement, is to say we know how we are going to resolve matters in the present and in the future. It's through exclusively peaceful means. And we want to see voices, including those of the DUP, who are a democratically elected party, articulating their perspectives, but giving a platform to somebody representing the Loyalist Communities Council, knowing who is involved in the Loyalist Communities Council, I would say is very unwise for the DUP. I mean, you later at the start, you know, Gavin Rom's talking about a reset. Part of that reset, I think, that was to be welcomed was Philip Brett yesterday as a DUP representative, you know, coming out and said of the PSNI, removing a poster in Rathcoole that was clearly threatening to local people. But can I come back just to the issue of the meeting that occurred yesterday? Because it's important. Because both the minister and then obviously the Loyalist Communities Council said that the meeting was about educational underachievement. You know, I have to say that is highly ironic. You know, the issue of educational achievement would be, you know, speaks to a matter close to my heart. I have talked on your show and many others about underachievement, about different strategies, government initiatives, approaches we need at school level. But you know what would really help address underachievement, Stephen, is if the loyalist groups represented by the LCC went away. If the face of the role models in working class communities, and that goes for dissident Republicans as well, if those role models disappeared. So if there were other role models in local working class communities who are able to support what's going on, support parents, support the schools to try to, you know, reduce the levels of underachievement, which plagues our society. We have it worst. You know, we have a longer tail of underachievement in this society than in others. And part of that is a result of our education system, of academic selection, and the consequences of that. But it's made even worse by the fact that we continue to have these criminal gangs 30 years after ceasefires, still claiming to have legitimacy, still acting like a cloak on, sitting oppressive cloak on top of working class communities and turning young lads in particular in the wrong direction. So it would have been better from my perspective, and I think many people out there, if the education minister said to these guys, do you know what would really help address educational underachievement? If your groups didn't exist no more. If you find more productive things to do.
He voted against them getting out of jail. He voted against, Paul Kevin voted against the Belfast Agreement.
But there were a number of reasons why the DUP were opposed to the Belfast Agreement, Stephen. You'll know that yourself. They were very opposed to the All-Ireland body.
And with regards to the Irish language school that you're talking about, it's so pretty close to that minister is telling me this morning that nobody will tell Paul Given what to do in terms of whether a school will open or not. Look, there are lots of people calling us this morning. Kevin's our first call. Morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Stephen.
What do you think?
Stephen, I think it's disgusting. I think that the education minister should seriously consider resigning that meeting with such a giant bigot organisation that holds back young Protestant working class people to the degree of the lack of education they have now to benefit their own ends. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's a bigot organization. You should resign.
We have seen representatives liaise. We have seen other senior representatives liaise with the LCC in the past. It's not just the education minister Paul Given who has met up with the LCC. We saw the former leader, for example, of the DUP, Sir Geoffrey Donaldson, meeting up with the LCC. We hear sometimes the police appealing to so-called community workers appealing to those so-called community leaders to quell violence. That's the police talking, both in public and behind the scenes, to paramilitaries. Now, Bobby Singleton, the Assistant Chief Constable, he is quoted in the Sunday Life as saying that he will not meet up, the police and I will not meet up with the LCC on any issue. So I think there does need to be a discussion in this country. Where is the bar for legitimacy to meet government? Like, at what point is there a bar of acceptability? Tracy next. Morning, Tracy.
Why doesn't Gavin Robinson meet up with Peter Weir and ask him about how wrong it can go? Because if the DUP have not learned in 22 plus years what went very, very wrong at another school and how much tensions get stoked up when they involve these paramilitaries and how it all ends up on the laps of the children, and the children have to carry it through life. I mean, Stephen, Holy Cross, I think, has been brushed away, has never been spoken about again. Let's forget about it. It's a total embarrassment. The whole world, everybody's seen what those children and parents went through.
This is Holy Cross you're talking about.
Yes, I went through it, and I had to go through it and work as well, because I worked up there as well. I got it even afterwards, Stephen, after Holy Cross. I was heavily pregnant, and they burnt the cars outside our school in Mercy College, and they threatened, come on out, we'll deal with it, because they recognised who I was. What I'm talking about is we don't want to go back to any situations like that. Go look it up. Look at it hard and long. Never let anything like that happen again.
Tracy, thank you. David Graham is a former special advisor for the DUP. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning, Stephen.
What is going on here? Is this genuinely a political party understanding the realpolitik of Northern Ireland and understanding that there'll be many families and their children who are embedded in communities who don't have the same view of the UDF, UVF, UDA, or what is going on?
Look, I think Stephen, we've all got to take a step back here and look at it. The Education Minister, from what I can gather, has agreed to a meeting with the LCC, and we'll discuss the rights and wrongs of that in a second. I'm led to believe that the meeting was based upon discussing education underachievement. I think that when you look at in the Western world, in Western Europe, a working class Protestant boy, a loyalist boy, whatever way you want to describe this demographic of society, is the most likely to leave school without a chance of having 5A stars to see at GCSE. Now, I think, Stephen, the problem we've got here is that LCC have set up a meeting to discuss that. I then believe they have, for some reason, unbeknownst to you and me, and probably one just for David Campbell, have tagged on this Irish language school in East Belfast, an entirely different issue, an entirely different discussion. Then they seem to have gone and briefed the papers for some unknown reason.
They should have a press statement.
Yeah, you know, this, I just don't understand this. And I think if you consider the LCC and who it was set up by, I mean, it was set up by Jonathan Powell, who was chief of staff to Tony Blair during the negotiations for the Belfast Agreement. And I think, in fairness to him and George Mitchell, they recognised that within the sort of PUL community, they hadn't progressed and developed the way, I suppose, the mirror image had on the other side of the political divide. So the idea of the LCC was very much legitimate. I think that the difficulty is when we then discuss paramilitarism and gangsterism and who's into what, that becomes a very different conversation, Stephen. I think when you take it back, I mean, I think the Education Minister was well within his rights to meet representatives of the loyalist community. But I think that the difficulty then becomes a question for the LCC. Who exactly are they representing? And I suppose, lastly,
well, we know who they're representing.
They kind of tagging on?
The people they represent include the UVF and UDA. So education minister is sitting in talks with a body which conveys the views of people who kneecap people, who shoot people, who say to kids and teenagers, do you know what? Here, take that bit of crack cocaine. Here, there's a bit of blow. Take that, knowing it will destroy lives. And our education minister is sitting in front of a body which represents some of those drug dealers.
No, look, Stephen, you're entirely right. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with that, but you've got to bear in mind as well, you know, if you look at, and not to mention, obviously, the First Minister refusing to condemn the IRA violence of the past, but I think even when you see the amount of people, both elected and non-elected, within the Sinn Féin movement who have been involved and convicted of a wide range of paramilitary activities. So I think you mentioned at the very start of the show, you know, we don't live in a normal society. And I think that probably, I think, is where when I hear feedback from people within loyalist communities that say, oh, well, you know, they, as they'll describe them, get X, Y, and Z, and we don't. And I think that has probably been, with respect, stoked by the media and stoked by some political representatives within the unionist community.
This is about, this discussion this morning on this programme is about where do we, the people of this country, set the bar for acceptability in terms of interaction with our government. How long are these people going to be allowed to say they are transitioning? How long are these people going to be allowed to say that they continue to need money in order to transition? And the LCC was brought in order to help these people transition. So what are they doing now?
Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest, Stephen, I don't know. I mean, probably a passing glance and interest in the LCC. I think the idea of it, as I said, in 2015 was a good one. But, I mean, I'm not convinced that it has developed and improved into what Jonathan Powell at the time, almost 10 years ago, wanted it to do. But I think that, you know, the difficulty is here that the idea, I don't think, was a bad one. And I think that, you know, you can't just write off large swathes of community in Northern Ireland because it doesn't sort of suit the agenda of, you know, the wider...
Let me put this a different way. So the local drug dealer up the Shankill rings the Department of Education and says, listen, I'd like to have a meeting with Paul Given about educational underachievement. The local thug who takes people up dark entries and shoots them in the knees as some type of community so-called punishment rings up the education minister and says, listen, any chance of a meeting? Now, I am not talking about David Campbell here. David Campbell is not those people, but he represents an organisation which includes those people.
So Stephen, you're being slightly sensationalist here now.
How am I?
I mean, you, Stephen,
where is
the
bar?
The reality of it is we've got two different issues here. In fact, more than two different issues. Education underachievement within the, let's call the PUL community, as the media will like to describe, people from a particular background, have got a clear issue with educational underachievement, have had a clear issue with not transitioning out of the past, like I think the same within, if you want to call the CNR community. Now, when we're getting into who's kneecapping who and who's dealing drugs, that's a criminal matter. That's a question for the PSNI, John Boucher, Bobby Singleton.
It includes the UDA and UVF.
But I think...
there's nothing sensationalist about this. These people should not be sanitised. The UDA and the UVF kill people, maim people, induce young people into drugs, community coercion, collect protection money still to this day on the Shankill.
Stephen, look, no one, certainly I won't argue with you about that, but what I also think is, I mean, I'm not in the business, and I think you'll recognise the amount of times I've been in your show, not in the business to defend someone from any party, but I think from the point of view, if you take this back, Jonathan Powell has formed the LCC with good intentions. It has been people like David McNary, a former MLA, David Campbell, former chairman of Ulster Unionists, you know, someone like Billy Hutchison, who was a leader of the PUP. You know, these are people who have gained democratic mandates. Now, look, that the LCC for me is, you know, what exactly is it there to do and is it doing that? But I also think that no one within the LCC has once defended the list of crimes that you've mentioned. So I think to them...
And David Campbell would say that he spent a lifetime trying to get these people to stand down and, so then, and get rid of
exactly.
them.
Exactly. And then to create a situation that Paul Given has met with people who are new cabin people down an alleyway, like that is sensational, Stephen.
Hold on. That's not what I've said.
From what is a legitimate argument.
That is not what I've said. But here's what I am asking. In order to get a meeting with the education minister of our country, should any group have to distance themselves and not in any way convey messaging for the likes of the UDA or UVF? I'm asking. Does there need to be a bar, a reset in terms of acceptability?
I 100% agree, and I think I've said this to you on your show before. I think where, you know, republicanism has been quite clever is we don't ever talk about dissident loyalists. So we have got dissident republicans who are the big bad wolf who do all the bad things that the Provisional IRA did in the past, but now it's bad. You know, these people linked to criminality. The main Republican movement is going in the right direction, and a fair degree of that analysis is fair enough. But we never hear about dissident loyalists. So I think if you think about it, the LCC are representing people who want to take society and the community in the right direction, and we don't ever hear a narrative around people who are actually dissident. And I think that's a wider challenge for the LCC, isn't it?
The Justice Minister now getting involved in this morning. Naomi Long has tweeted, the LCC was set up to assist loyalist paramilitaries exit the stage. Now it seems to be legitimising their continued existence, amplifying their attempted course of control of the community. They represent no one and need to get off the backs of local people. Chris Donnelly?
Yeah, I think there's two things, if you don't mind saying. Firstly, you referenced the bar. The thing is this. The bar is always changing. You know why? Because people want better. So what was acceptable in Northern Ireland 50 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, we don't want to stand still. I got two teenage kids. I'm damn delighted that they've gone through their lives not having to worry the way my parents had to worry about me growing up. People out there are delighted that the PS and I made that move about removing a poster yesterday. That's lifting the bar. That's saying something is no longer acceptable. Let's see where that goes. But I also have to make this point. David referenced there the issue of underachievement. This needs said because it's the facts. Approaching the issue of underachievement in a sectarian manner is not helpful. There is a truth out there. It's very clear. Year in, year out, there are more working-class Catholic children, boys and girls, who underachieve and fall on the same education scrap heap that David talked about, the five good GCSEs. There are actually more poor Catholic children who fall on that education scrap heap than their working class partisan counterparts, by dint of the fact simply that we have more poor Catholics in Northern Ireland. The issue the LCC probably are trying to talk about, whether they were aware of the facts or not, is that in percentage terms, a higher percentage of Protestant boys find themselves on that education scrap heap. But the matter is that this sometimes it's portrayed as the Catholic area is God, they're racing ahead. That's not the simple truth. Look at the objective facts. Our poor communities are together on this. They need to be together. And rather than sectarianizing the issue, recognizing that in that poor Catholic area, the poor Protestant area.
Okay, Chris Donnelly's just dropped off the line. We'll pause there anyway and get the news at 9:33. The Stephen Nolan Show! And that last story you're hearing in the news there, we'll be picking up on that. Bobby Singleton, the Assistant Chief Constable, talking to Buckler on Gamoo this morning on how the police have gone into Rathcoole and taken down posters. The obvious question is, how are they going to say in the future, no, we're not taking that down, it's not our job to do so, when there's a poster up intimidating Catholics, intimidating Protestants, intimidating people elsewhere in Northern Ireland. Bobby Singleton very much targeting the Department of Infrastructure with his criticism, saying that they engaged with them weeks and weeks ago and they basically heard nothing back. So there are questions for John O'Dowd, the Infrastructure Minister, the Sinn Féin Minister, John O'Dowd. The police are saying it's his responsibility and he's doing nothing about it. We'll look at that in a few minutes' time. Our top story today, very reactive, as you can expect. Brian, morning, Brian.
Yes.
Good morning.
Stephen. Good morning. Sorry about that. Listen, Stephen, people know now the LCC used to represent and speak for the paramilitaries. That's gone. They represent and speak for gangsters now. The LCC had a cheek to make that statement about the Irish schools. Looking and children are going to go to these schools. They had no respect for children in lawless areas when people were selling them drugs. And people know this. I mean, this is what I read in the papers every Sunday. You know, and I mean, how dare they make any statement about children?
Well, the LCC have urged the Education Minister to halt any plans to build this Irish language school in East Belfast.
What gives them the right to say that? What gives them the right to say or demand that, even mention children in their statements?
Well,
what's going on in the Royalist areas?
Well, the obvious question, we've asked David Campbell to come on this morning. He hasn't answered the phone. The obvious question for David Campbell, given his understanding of how the UVF and UDA may be thinking, the obvious elephant in the room here is that if that Irish language school does open, will there be any threat from the UDA or UVF?
Well, it's happened in the GAA that
is the question to the LCC, to David Campbell, when they were briefing about this meeting with the Education Minister, Paul Given, this morning. Mr. Campbell, I'm publicly asking you this morning to help us understand the thinking of the UDA and UVF. Will they now target those paramilitary organisations? Will they now target school children, playgrounds, schools with intimidation or their parents? What is your understanding, David Campbell? Brand, thank you. Brendan in North Belfast. Good morning, Brendan. Go on. James in Temple Patrick. Morning, James.
Morning, Stephen. 2 points. First point is Naomi is absolutely right. After 20-odd years, these people need to go and go away now. We cannot keep saying, oh, we're coming out of conflict. We've been coming out for years. Go away. And the second point is very clear. When are you going to put an audience back to Nolan Live?
Early next year.
Yeah, good.
And we'll get you in. We'll get you in, James. No Live's back tomorrow night, by the way. You've just reminded. No, it's tonight. I thought it was tonight. I need to get washed and get a suit on, get shaved. It's tonight, 10:40, BBC One. Thank you, James. Jimmy Bryson, loyalist commentator. Good morning to you, Jimmy.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So, what do you think about our education minister meeting up with the LCC?
I think he's absolutely correct to meet the LCC, and I think, look, if they, and again, I don't speak for the LCC, so if you want to, you know, take their view on it, they put a public statement out. But at the end of the day, if the LCC are doing something positive, which is working on educational underachievement and educational issues within working class loyalist communities, then I think that's fantastic to see, and the LCC should be applauded and encouraged for that. If they have the support, which they plainly do, of the UVF and the UDN and the Red Hand Commando to encourage education in working class loyalist communities.
Why would we give a damn what the UDN and UVF think about educating kids? We know how they've educated kids in the past. They put a gun in their hand and told them to put a mask on and shoot somebody.
And the same is true of the IRA, who continue to direct and control Sinn Féin according to the security services. So loyalists have to be afforded the opportunity to transition and play a positive role within communities.
Is it not over, Jimmy, this transitioning farce? Is it not over?
Loyalists haven't had the support, and particularly from the state, that Republicans have had, which allowed them to essentially transition into the corridors of power. Loyalists have been very much left behind. But let me say this. You see, it suits the media that they want loyalists to be presented as knuckle-draggers, drug dealers, criminals and thugs, and that has to be the stereotype applied.
Isn't that what the UDA and UVF is?
Elements of people who have been associated with those groups, absolutely, and that's disgraceful. And let me say this really clearly. Anybody that's involved in drug dealing, criminality, extortion, is not a loyalist, has no place in loyalism. I think the LCC would agree with that. I think the leaderships of the UVF, UDA and Red Hand Commando would agree with that. So let's nail that from the start. But it suits nationalism. It suits elements of the media for loyalism to be stereotyped in that particular way. And it doesn't suit when loyalism starts to involve itself in issues like education, like educational underachievement and those community-based issues. So do you know what?
Sorry.
See if the UVF and the UDA are going to involve themselves in encouraging young loyalists to get educated, to go to school, to become solicitors, barristers, journalists, then that is exercising a positive influence.
I
think that is a good thing.
You use this broad term, Jimmy, deliberately, when you talk about loyalism. there will be many people within loyalism who find what the UDA and UVF currently still are abhorrent. Hold on a minute.
What do you mean, what they currently still are? Well, let's just break that
down. Hold on a moment. And then, of course, you can come back. You can find many loyalists within working class communities, working class Protestant communities in Northern Ireland, who find people who use violence, the intimidation of violence, the cover of being in the UDA, UVF to coerce and intimidate people abhorrent. They find it sick. You can be a loyalist and not align yourself with a paramilitary organisation. So why should there not be a bar in this society that you will not get any access to our education minister unless you completely, utterly disavow yourself from anything that these people stand for?
Well, 2 points on that. The convicted RLA terrorists walking about Stormont haven't disavowed themselves of what the RLA did or continue to do. They're still active, according to security services. So that's one thing.
Security services say they're on a peace footing. The IRA Army Council are on a peace footing.
Sorry, loyalism is on a peace footing.
Is it?
Do you read the Independent Reporting Commission reports? Do you take the time to read them?
Are you trying to tell me the UDA and UVF are law-abiding citizens?
No, I'm telling you that the UVF, the UDA and the Red Hand Commando are on a peace footing. They're committed to peace. They pose no risk to the state. Are there people who would have been involved in those groups who have continued to involve themselves in criminality and coercion and sometimes used the flag of convenience of those organisations to further those nefarious activities? Absolutely. Should those people be dealt with? Yes. Who should they be dealt with by? If you're transitioning, they should be dealt with by the forces of law and order. That is the PSNI. So see anybody who's involved in drug dealing, criminality, using the names of organisations to bully and intimidate people. It's a matter for the police, and the police should go ahead and deal with them. 110%, unequivocal. So I can't say any more than that. But there are people in those organisations, at a leadership level in those organisations, who are committed to doing something positive and to transition those groups and using any influence they have for good away from any of that type of activity.
What do they know about education?
I think that should be encouraged and supported. And working class loyalist communities have been left behind. There is a huge gap in the professional class, media, academia, particularly the legal profession, whereby working class loyalists are not represented. They often don't feel they have pathways there. And if the LCC are taking on a policy objective of trying to encourage education, then I think that that is a positive news story which should be welcomed and it should be supported. But as I said, and I was cut off when I was making the point, it suits many people to stereotype loyalists because it helps to keep working class down. They don't want loyalists to be barristers or solicitors or journalists because they want loyalism and working class unionism to go away. And so, we are not going away. We're going to involve ourselves in education. We're going to do all of these positive things. And anybody, as aside from that, who's involved in crime, drugs, criminality, let me say it very clearly, the PSNI should go and deal with them.
LCC is so interested in education that having met the education minister about underachievement, they know exactly what the top line to a story would be when they call for an Irish language school not to open. They're so interested in underachievement of Protestant working class boys and children that they actually put out the conversation that they've had about a school not opening. That's the LCC that cares about the underachievement of Protestant children, is it?
A couple of things about that. So the educational underachievement of working class loyalists is going to be fixed by an Irish language school imposed in a community where it isn't wanted.
So why did they include that in their statement? Why is the LCC talking about an Irish language school if it's about Protestant children and their achievement in school?
So let me just say that out loud again to see how ridiculous your point is. Working class loyalists are going to be benefited. Working class loyalist children, the pathway to better educational underachievement is they have to go to an Irish language school.
Why did they put their messaging out about wanting that school to stay closed? Why?
Because there is significant community opposition to that school. being built where it is.
Right.
It is the Irish language and GAA and things like that are not wanted in many working class loyalist communities. And that is a general issue. That is not specific to any one school.
Well,
or
the LCC got access to our education people. Minister, and having got access, have then used that access to get a story into the media about an Irish language school not opening, rather than their ideas, their appeals to government for funding for Protestant children. Like, where is all of this messaging from the LCC about the children they purport to represent?
So I actually read the LCC's whole statement, and there's quite a lot in it about educational underachievement and that type of stuff. And I know the LCC have actually been involved, because I spoke to David Campbell about it actually over the last number of months. The LCC have been involved in trying to develop projects to encourage education amongst young people. So they have been doing...
And what do they tell kids about the UDA and UVF when they're doing this?
Well,
what do they actually say to kids?
Well, I don't know. The conflict...
Well, you seem to know an awful lot.
Because they're not having educational classes on the UVF and the UDA.
All right.
The LCC, as far as I know, are passionate, because I've spoke to many people, and listen, I've spoke to people at the most senior leadership levels of the UVF and the UDA and the Red Hand Commando, and I've had conversations with them, and they all agree that the priority for working class young loyalists has to be to get people into the professional class, to create pathways to allow people to be solicitors.
But Jimmy, you cannot be a solicitor or a barrister if you're caught with a mask on and a gun in your hand.
So there is a contradiction here in
the UDA and UVF being in the LCC. The LCC talking on their behalf, representing their views, and some 18-year-old living on the Shankill, I'm just taking that as one of the areas, deciding whether they're going to be seduced into those organisations or not.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll go as far as I can go if there's any young loyalists listening to this. And I think this is, you know, let me put it really clearly. See, if anybody asks you to put on a mask, lift a gun, or do any of that, say no. Say no, because there's no future in it, and it's not going to achieve anything, and there's no necessity for it, and there's no violent conflict on. The battle, the political battle for the cause of unionism and loyalism, is going to be fought in the courts, it's going to be fought in the media, it's going to be fought in the professional class, in academia, in all of those arenas, in the political arena. So lift a law book, lift an education book, go to university, because that is the best weapon that you will ever have.
And
you will do more with a law book than you ever will with a balaclava
and a gun. We're talking about discussions that government and, you know, the power bases in Northern Ireland have with various different groups and people. Do you talk to the police often? More to the point, do the police reach out to you often to use your influence?
Yes.
What do they ask you to do?
Well, I engage with the police now regularly, on a weekly basis.
On a weekly basis?
Well, I mean, regular enough. Depends what's going on, but yes. And what's wrong with that?
Sorry, they contact you on a weekly basis?
Well, there would be contact both ways about ongoing community issues. I mean, what's the issue with that?
What type of thing do they ask you?
About ongoing community issues. About ongoing community issues, depends what the issues of the particular day is.
For someone you seem to be stumbling through this. What type of things do they ask you?
Well, they ask me, and all engagement is entirely within the law and is entirely proper.
What do they ask you to do?
In the same way as they don't ask me to do anything. I have discussions with the PSNI around, you know, continue to build confidence in policing within loyalist communities. That's very, very important. I think the police recognise that.
If there is violence in an area, do they ever ask you to use your influence?
I think it would be pretty standard practice if there's ongoing violence or tensions or problems, the police would reach out to people within those communities who they have relationships with to see, can anybody bring positive influence to bear to bring an end to any of that type of thing.
I'm about to do a story tonight on Nolan Live about a group of businesses, some of whom haven't heard from the police in 9 months and they've been robbed. And you're in dialogue with the police on a weekly basis?
on community issues, but things that's going on within loyalist communities, and that is absolutely correct. The police would be in dialogue with people from the Republican communities, from ethnic minority communities, and it's a core function of the PSNI. They're very much into community policing, so all of that is entirely proper. And why should the police not engage regularly with people from the loyalist community? Why should they not?
Jimmy Bryson, thank you very much. Let's move to the PSNI now. They have slammed the Department for Infrastructure for their silence around taking illegal posters off lampposts. This is Assistant Chief Constable Bobby Singleton was speaking to Gamu this morning, Buckler, on Good Morning Ulster, and said that it took far too long to have racist posters removed and police needed to intervene. Now, the interesting part about all of this is, so the police have climbed up lampposts, have taken racist posters down. So if the police seem to be, have opened up and very interesting conversation here. If they've done it this time, why aren't they doing it every time? They're criticising John O'Dowd's department, the Department of Infrastructure, for their inactivity. And they're saying it is the Department of Infrastructure's job to do this. Malachy O'Doherty, writer, Belfast Telegraph columnist, with us this morning. Morning, Malachy.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Former police officer Gordon Downey, former Bronze Commander in Armed Response Unit. Morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So, Malachy, has this opened up a new world where if there is a very offensive illegal poster up, the cops need to get up and get them down?
Well, I think this was intimidation of an entire community. So it's a clear criminal offence. So it's obviously a matter for the police. It's very interesting that the police called out John O'Dowd on it. That's good. I'm happy enough with that. But essentially, if you have posters in a housing estate which are threatening the entire population of that estate, and those are racist posters and they're sectarian, anti-Muslim posters, then that is a policing issue. And not only do they need to take the posters down, surely they have to forensically test them and find out who put them up and then locate the people who put them up and bring them before the law and have them dealt with. And then, when you've them dealt with, there are such things as restraining orders which should be used against somebody stalking a former partner or somebody who had sex offences against them being kept away from schools. So a restraining order against anybody of that kind involved in that, but from being part of that estate or being allowed to enter into it.
But, like, this is an important matter. Clearly it's an important matter. Bobby Singleton is saying that they need to now urgently meet with the Department of Infrastructure. We're putting questions in to the department right now. What is John O'Dowd's reaction to this? Is he going to accept the appeal from the Assistant Chief Constable to urgently meet up with the PSNI to get this sorted once and for all? Does John O'Dowd accept that it is his department's responsibility? Meanwhile, having climbed up the lamppost and took the posters down, Bobby Singleton saying that the cops don't run around with ladders all day.
You make it sound that like it is incredibly simple. I mean, I think we're talking sometimes about operating at significant height. With that comes a risk. I mean, police officers don't drive around routinely with ladders in their police cars.
Gordon?
Well, that's correct. Police don't drive around with ladders in their police cars. However, there was a solve many years ago. I remember that we picked up someone who was employed basically secretly, and we picked them up to paint over graffiti after the Daniel McColgan murder back in the early noughties. So it was police provided security for the person who went out, and then the person painted over it. So, I mean, there are solves for this, but ultimately it's a failure of government. It's a societal issue. Yet again, police are being left to pick up the pieces following then the poor decisions made by those in government that have caused this perceived problem.
They will have known, obviously they will have known, Gordon, the precedent that they're setting here, or at least the reminder that the police can do this if they really want to. So what happens in the future when illegal flags go up on lampposts and people say they're being intimidated out of an area? Have the police got to do it now, time and time again? How can they choose to do it now and not the next time?
Well, police are just a football in Northern Ireland. I mean, that's not arguable. When it comes to resources, police have to look at what they can actually achieve. In other words, they don't pick a fight they can't win. So it is not unreasonable to suggest that police could go in and with others remove these posters. However, if police were to go into certain areas of Belfast and remove flags of the opposing community, there would be.
I understand that, and I understand that, and I accept that, and I accept that policing has to be done sensitively. And yes, Gordon, it has to be done within resources. But the posters indicate a degree of criminal intent far, far higher than putting up a flag on a lamppost, unless, of course, the flag is deliberately intended to intimidate. These posters were clear declarations of criminal intent to do harm to people and to bar people from entering that estate. That puts it on another level, and surely, even aside from the responsibilities of John O'Dowd, it's so obviously a crime that the police should have entered into and interfered with and intervened on immediately and pursued, you know, to not only bring the poster down, but to find and pursue the persons who put it up.
It doesn't sound like they're accepting that, Malachy. Have a listen. Bobby Singleton's not mincing his words here about the Department of Infrastructure. Have a listen.
It has taken far too long. And as I say, it's got to the point where police have decided that we must intervene. We still maintain the position that actually the removal should have been done by the Department for Infrastructure.
So they're still maintaining that position. John O'Dowd's got to answer this.
Well, yes, he has to answer it, but it was a crime. You know, the police are the agency responsible for curtailing crime and finding criminals. It's as simple as that. You cannot surely declare an entire housing estate that you are watching them, that you'll go after people if they facilitate Muslims or so-called illegals moving in. You cannot do that and say that this is merely, you know, some kind of inconvenience caused by litter on a lamppost.
The crime in the investigation of the crime is who put them up. The crime is catching and bringing for prosecution the people who did it. Taking those down, the police are saying, is the responsibility, Gordon, of the Department of Infrastructure?
Well, again, there'll be a bun fight over who's going to be responsible, and that's just the way it is in modern society. Yes, a crime has been committed, and if police are going to investigate the crime, the best evidence is going to be evidence that has not been touched by any other person, as someone alluded to earlier on in relation to fingerprinting or DNA. So yes, I can see the argument for police recovering perhaps a certain amount of them. And then perhaps if police resources can't cope with the amount to be recovered, then they could work in conjunction with other organisations. It is a crime.
There are so many Ring cameras around the place and Google cameras and whoever else owns these security cameras that we have on our doorbells. I wonder, do the police actually ever go and try to establish who put them up with the CCTV, the camera systems on people's homes around the place, or do they just not have the resources to do it, or do they not want to do it? Malachy Gordon, thank you very much. Here comes the 10 o'clock news. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget NOLA Live back on BBC One tonight at 10:40 and the iPlayer if you want to catch it at some other time. A lot of reaction to our top story today. Our Education Minister, Paul Given, meeting the LCC. It would be interesting next time we're hearing from Paul on the programme to actually get into the detail of what is he doing in terms of underachievement within school children and those people who statistically, from the day they are born, are at a stage where they are destined not to achieve as much statistically as other people in other postcodes. So that's really interesting territory, which we should get into. And I guess the pertinent question for the Loyalist Community Council this morning is that if they are genuinely interested in the educational achievement of some of the young people working in their community, do they have any understanding of the media in terms of why then, if that really was their focus, did they talk in their statement about wanting to stop an Irish language school from opening up? Mary's in Belfast. Morning, Mary.
Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Mary. Go ahead.
Stephen, I'm taking it up with you, i.e. with regard, you're criticising, i.e. these people who have transitioned, who are trying to help my community. I was born reared in the Shankill, and I see youngsters now achieving nothing from I was at school when the opportunity was from there. Now, the bottom line is, do you have evidence that the people who went and met the minister, that they're involved in kneecapping, as you say?
No. In fact, I say the opposite. They are not.
Exactly. So their purpose is to try and raise my community and to help youngsters from my community. Is that so wrong? Because I asked the question of you, why for 20 years that my community has fell behind with education, and now because transitional paramilitaries is trying to lift it, it's wrong. What has
transitional paramilitaries
been doing for my community?
But listen to yourself, Mary. So what? Transitional paramilitaries, like, what does that mean?
Stephen, I know people on this road that I was born and reared on who, i.e., maybe were involved in the Troubles, as we call them, but now all they do is work for my community, trying to get grants, trying to help people.
Well, then...
Stephen, I hear you saying...
Well, then they're not transitioning, are they?
No. I hear you telling people about the IE kneecapping. Who has been kneecapped in Loyalist areas lately?
Oh, lately now?
Yeah, who has?
They don't. They're going to give an undertaking to never do it again. Have they done that?
No. I asked you. You're specifically saying about the kneecap.
I wasn't just talking, Mary, about kneecapping. I don't know is the answer, right?
No.
But I do know they're still dealing drugs. I do know they're still collecting protection money. They're walking into businesses on the Shankill.
Well, I'll tell you a story, Stephen.
And they're taking protection money.
I'm
telling you they're doing it.
And they come in. And I said, no, you're not getting any money. And I sent for, i.e., as you call it, traditional paramilitary, brought them in, and the shop owner was told, don't pay, there should be nobody paying here. Now, what I would like you to do, Stephen, if you have the evidence of these people that you say is paying paramilitary money, you take it to the ones on the Shankill, and you know who they are. And you explain to them who's paying. Because we can't go on demonising my community. And I listened to Brian from West Belfast. He knows a lot about the Shankill. Well, I worked in the shop and I refused
There is no demonisation of your
community.
There is, Stephen. Here's what's going on here within this discussion today. Enough that these people hear the signal loud and clear. First of all, enough. Enough of your excuses about transitioning while you're conveniently pocketing taxpayers' money to transition. And you keep on transitioning, therefore you keep on pocketing money. So the people in these working class loyalist communities should understand, if any of them don't, that while many of them are sitting on the breadline, while many of them are trying to top up their electric meter, there is still money, public money, going in to these groups because they conveniently haven't transitioned enough. Enough! Get out! Stop! Secondly, Mary, in terms of representing your community, I am asking questions on behalf of those parents in your community who do not want their children to have any mixed messages about what terrorists are and what they do.
Where's the mixed messages, Stephen?
Well, what does the UVF and UDA do?
Where's the mixed messages in the school about terrorism? There's no messages in the school about terrorism.
Mary, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Morning to you. Thank you, Mary. Good call. 030 30 80 55 55. A border poll is not a priority for the Labour Party, according to Northern Ireland Minister Fleur Anderson. Fleur made the comments during an SDLP fringe event at the Labour Party conference in Liverpool. Some nationalists call for plans for a border poll. Do Labour politicians only have one answer?
No. No border poll is imminent, in my opinion, that there are many other things that we should be working on. It's not a priority for us. No, no, no.
The criterion, if you like, for a border poll is very clear. Now, there is no evidence that that condition has been met.
Be a border poll under a Keir Starmer premiership?
I don't think we're anywhere near that kind of question. It's absolutely hypothetical.
So it's unlikely?
It's not even on the horizon. You gotta let that thinking go. Stop saying no, no, no.
Say yes once more. And what I firmly believe is in this decade, we will have those referendums, and it's my job and the job of people like me who believe in reunification to convince, to win hearts and minds and to convince people of that opportunity. Try to see things my way. Do
I
have
to keep on talking till I can't go on? I think a border poll's inevitable. If you ask me when that is, I think it's probably 5 years off at least. I think the Sinn Féin position is it should be held within 5 years. But so let's say we're talking about it being 5 years off. We can work it out. We can work it
out. Life is very short, and there's no time. I want to have it whenever it is the right time. I'm not fixated on a date, but I'm very fixated on the planning. Everybody will have their say, so let's make that also very, very clear. It'll only be the people here that will ever decide a constitutional change. And that's a good thing for us all to get engaged in terms of the conversation.
Well, the SDLP councillor Carl White is with us this morning, as is the former DUP MLA Jim Wells. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Good morning. So Labour said, look, it's not a priority. It's going nowhere, Carl, anytime soon.
Well, Labour have said that, and you had a clip there from a former Tory Secretary of State, and I don't think there's any British politician who, by definition, are unionists and believe in the union, are going to volunteer at a fringe event at a Labour Party conference or on camera when asked by a BBC journalist that, yes, actually, I do think the time has come for a border poll. The requirement for a poll is set out in the Good Friday Agreement. It is vague. It's not clear. And I think when we look back, putting that a decision to the UK Secretary of State for Northern Ireland probably wasn't the best approach to undertake when it came to deciding the constitutional future of this part of Ireland. I think what's more interesting...
So if it's so vague and it's obviously so controversial, how is it ever going to be triggered?
Well, I think the triggering of it, the undertaking of a poll to test the views of people here will come after a process where we look and discuss the range of issues and benefits that would offer and that would bring to this part, to Northern Ireland. You know, our National Health Service is collapsing. They're building a new one in the south. We're building fewer homes here than we've done even during World War II. In the Republic of Ireland, they're building more new homes than they've ever done.
But economies are cyclical, they were in trouble in the south in the past, weren't they? They're now in the good terms, the good times. Are you really leveraging whether there should be a border poll based on the current economic climate?
No, I'm basing it on you're going to be healthier. All their indicators on health are better. Their indicators on housing are better.
At the moment.
It's better for people who work. The wages are higher. It's better for those who aren't able to work. Benefits that are much higher for people that aren't able to work, higher proportion of university graduates. And actually, when you look at almost any measure, UN Happiness Index, it's a better place to live.
Well, Jim,
no one's saying it'll be perfect, Stephen. No one's saying that.
Jim,
it will be better than what we have at the moment.
Jim Wells, that's quite a strong sell.
Well, it hasn't sold anything to me, Stephen. I welcome the fact that the Secretary of State and his assistant, Mrs. Anderson, at the start of their 5-year term, have made it very clear, Fleur Anderson, have made it very clear that there was no prospect of a border poll during the lifetime of their government. So that's 5 years away. So Mary Lou suggesting it's going to happen within 5 years is pie in the sky. Secondly, all this nonsense about the Republic and its economy, it's fool's gold, Stephen. They've managed to sort set up a system whereby large multinationals are funneling vast amounts of their profits to the Irish economy. Does anybody seriously believe that 80% of the iPads in the world are sold in the Irish Republic? No, they're not. But they're billed through the Irish Republic.
No one believes that because that's not true. No one's saying that.
And indeed, the EU ruled that what they were doing was outside their particular constitution. The fact is that the Republic have set up this all unique, very unusual system whereby large multinationals can put their profits through the Irish Republic and then the Republic takes the tax. That will stop. So therefore, this is just an apparition. The reality is we're not against the United Ireland simply because of economics. We're against it because we're British. We're part of the United Kingdom. We wish to remain part
of
the
economics are quite a powerful argument because the economics influence your ability to build schools, fix the roads. In fact, they've got so much money, Jim, they're sending some of it up here.
Yes, Stephen, but I make the point that this is an operation.
Meanwhile, your British government, how much are they sending over here?
Well, actually, quite a lot, Stephen. There's a £12 billion subvention from the UK government to this part of the UK. So, I mean, the reality is that I often use this phrase, Stephen, everybody wants to go to heaven, but no one wants to die on Tuesday. In other words, there's lots of people out there who have a mythical aspiration for United Ireland, but just not now, thank you very much. I want to get the children educated, I want to get my wee business up and running, I want to build my own house or whatever. People, some nationalists have this, but when the crunch comes, all the opinion polls show that a significant number of nationalists will vote to stay within the United Kingdom, and of course the vast majority of unionists will vote to stay, vote for the status quo. So it isn't on the cards. So why plunge the country into the absolute chaos that a border poll camp pain would definitely incur? Why should we do that?
Let's let Carl reply to you.
I think it's funny to listen to Jim Wells, who was an arch-Brexiteer, if I recall, talking about plunging the country into chaos. And I also think it's interesting, instead of addressing the points that I made, he takes us off on a wild goose chase about multinationals and apples, trying to deflect. The reality is, and Jim may not like this, a lot of unionists actually are open to this conversation. They're listening intently. They're seeing how it doesn't matter if you have a Tory government or a Labour government in London. Actually, fundamentally, they don't care about Northern Ireland. And they're also seeing the impotence of the Northern Ireland executive in dealing and facing with the challenges and constantly running to London. You know, Jim's saying London gives a lot of money. His party colleagues are saying they don't give enough. I think the reality is, and people are clever, they're wise. They can see themselves the direction of travel in Dublin versus the direction of travel in London when it comes to public finances and also what the future looks like. Now, there is a point, and Jim did raise it, about people being British and their identity. And I think there's a big job, Stephen, there with all of those that are seeking to the unification of Ireland, that we address those issues head on. There's lots I don't buy for 1 second this argument that Northern Ireland is failed state, very negative language used by some commentators and other politicians about it, that somehow people, you know, they're not really British, they're not, you know, they're actually Irish, but they don't realise it. I think that's all nonsense. Okay. There's a good cultural history here on both sides, and that needs addressed. And we need to have those conversations.
Final word to you, Jim.
Well, when we see the fate of our co-patriots, the Protestant community in the Irish Republic since partition, be scared, be very scared. I mean, the reality is when I drive to the Irish Republic, you see Protestant churches closed down. They use as libraries, they use as carpet warehouses. The population has dwindled. I mean, the reality is that that's the future that the population, the Protestant unionist population, face in the United Ireland. Thanks, but no thanks. But at the end of the day,
it's hardly going to happen, is it?
Well, it's not going to happen. That's the good news.
No. The Protestant population, what, dwindling? Are they going to be prevented from reproducing, or what are you talking about?
Well, I think you know, the lesson from the Irish Republic is that so many Protestants felt it was a cold house for their culture that they had to get out, they had to move, and of course the Catholic Church stipulated that all children from mixed marriages had to be brought up as Roman Catholics. So I mean, there's so many issues out there, but at the end of the day, the people who will decide this are the people of Northern Ireland, and there's clearly a clear majority. All the opinion polls, the Life and Times survey shows that a significant majority people of Northern Ireland wish to remain okay. within the United Kingdom.
Jim, thank you very much. Always good to talk to you, sir. Thank you. Carl White, thank you as well. 21 minutes past 10, such is the Nolan Show, that we come from all this heavy politics that we're doing, all the Ryan to our friend, the man that's always happy, Hugo Duncan, who's in Dublin this morning. Good morning to you, Hugo.
Stephen, good morning to you.
To be inducted into the IMRO Radio Awards Hall of Fame, no less.
What do you think of that? Hey?
I think it's amazing. Congratulations.
I can't believe it. I never sat last night. I'm down here. I stayed down last night with my wife down with me and my daughter and my granddaughter. And we stayed down here last night. But, you know, I never slept because I'm very nervous about the whole thing.
Well, what's it feel like?
I think it's great. You know, I never thought, I class myself, you know, I wouldn't class myself a BBC radio presenter because there's so many talented people there, but I class myself as a sort of a singer that's playing music to entertain people in the afternoon, and it's working, and I've been great. Okay, I got the job in 5th of October 1998 for 6 months, and I'm still there yet.
Really? So they give you a 6 month contract at the beginning?
Yeah, and then I read that February. I got it the 5th of October, and I went, then in February there was a big write up in the Sunday papers about the BBC were dumbing down and they were cutting, changing all the schedules. So I took it for granted I was the last one, and I was the dumbest there, so I was going to go. But the next thing was I was going out that same afternoon, and I met Anna Carr. And I said, Anna...
Who was the former boss, the former controller.
Former boss, yes. And she said to me, Hugo, are you enjoying your afternoons? I said, love them. And she says, are you looking forward to the summer? I said, Anna, I finished at the end of March, because when she told me it was the end of March, I told her, never worry about it because you can put the P45 inside a birthday card. But I said, sure, I finished at the end of March. Oh, and I said, I read your write-up in the paper. And she says, oh, I hope I didn't put you after Sunday lunch. And she says, no, that doesn't involve you at all. So as far as I know now, they forgot completely about me.
many years are you on Radio Ulster now?
I'm Radio Ulster, I would say, on, you know, on the day programme now, 26 years.
Wow.
I'll be 26 on the 5th of October. And before that, I was working for Foyle on a Monday and a Friday. And then we went on to Foyle and different places on the end.
So what is in your mind? I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about this. Do you keep on going for as long as you can? Or when you're in this game couple of decades and here you're getting the Emeralds Radio Awards Hall of Fame, like, have you got retirement in your sights, or are you going to keep on going until they shoot you?
Well, no, I reckon if I retired today, I'd be dead next week. Because, and what I mean is, I would have no zest for to carry on, because I can honestly say that I never worked in 55 years. I started off in a band called the Tall Men, and we're very lucky. We got to number one in the whole lot that time with a big band going, and that was in 71. I moved in the next thing we came to the radio, and I moved into the radio as well. And that 55 years passed, but I never worked a day in my life. Because I enjoyed every moment. I always say that if you get a job you like, your week is 5 or 7 days shorter. And I never worked.
And did you say there that, look, if you left, you would have no zest to carry on? What's that mean?
Well, you know, I've every day I've got a reason to get up. I've got a reason to do something. You have a reason to keep yourself going and you know, I think the entertainment business we're in keeps us alive and keeps us moving and keeps us going. I remember one day sitting at a funeral, and there was a lot of entertainers behind us sitting there. And one very well-known entertainer said to me, he says, you can see the difference in the man sitting there, and he's got very little to look forward to. And you can see the difference in those boys here at the back. We think we're teenagers.
So it keeps you young, Hugo.
Keeps you young. Well, you're young at heart.
You've got
never miss a song.
You've got a particular, and this is probably why you're part of the reason why you're getting this accolade. You've got a particular relationship with the people who listen to you and the local community, and that's pretty special.
It is very special. But the one thing, you know, I know a lot of young ones nowadays, when they're doing programs, they're worried about this and worried about that and worried about people in the house. But when I go on the air every day, I respect everything I have to respect. But I also, the first things in my mind are the man or the woman that's sitting at home and maybe having a big family and never see one of them from one year to another. So I try to play an old song that's going to set a wee memory alight in their minds. And there are a lot of people that tune in from nursing homes as well, and residential homes. I do it for the listener and to try and make somebody laugh and smile.
How old are you now, Hugo?
I am 74, boy.
Wow. And you know, when you get to 74, when any of us gets to 74, there'll be bumps along the road.
Don't chat about bumps.
There certainly have been for me.
Niagara Falls.
I'm sure there have been for you too. So what are the kind of life lessons that you know now that, you know, you've got to that age, you've survived, when you look back on your life?
You know, I always say to people, if they have something in their mind and worrying them, always talk to somebody about it. And I think that's one of the biggest problems. In our business, you talk and you talk and you talk. And sometimes you forget about your own problems. But then you have to face them up and go towards them and the whole lot. And it's when you do face them that the problems are not really as big a problem. I remember coming off the drink and I thought the biggest problem in the world, I thought it was the problem was just, I would never get over it. And the minute I started to talk about it, it was the start of the end of it. And life's the same thing. If you have something bothering you, talk to somebody about it.
Are you ever tempted to have a drink again?
No. Would never have a drink again, because my wife would kill me. I would die quicker then. But no, I would never. But you know, I always say, you have to know your starting point and your finishing point. And when you know that, you can keep yourself. And I see a lot of people in our business that, you know, have started and they've gone right up as far as they're concerned in their own mind and maybe haven't moved. You keep yourself in your parameter and you don't go out of it. You don't try to do anything. I couldn't do your job. And, you know, I go on there every day.
I couldn't do your job, Hugo.
Oh, no. But I go on there and I just try to make people happy. And always remember, there's people worse than us.
You're sitting when you receive this award today, the likes of the late John Bennett, Walter Love, Stephen Clements, Gerry Anderson, Seamus McKee, Linda McCauley, lots and lots of your colleagues who you will have worked with here over the years, and your family are going to be with you today. How important is family to you and them being there with you today?
You see, it's funny to think of it when you're growing up, you're tucked into your work and you just work, and you go here, there and everywhere. And I did it my way for too long. Now the biggest thing I have in my life, there's three of them inside there. My wife's there, my daughter, and my granddaughter. And that's the things that matter in life, your family.
You're getting emotional, Hugo.
Yeah.
Is that because you don't think in the earlier years you put in enough and now you want to?
Yeah, that's been, you see, and one of the things that play up is the honest fact of it too as well. Yes, there are times you forgot about everybody and you only thought of yourself. But now I've got four grandchildren and I've got a son-in-law and I've got Suzanne, my own daughter, and Joan. And, you know, Joan and Suzanne are two people now. It don't be too long telling me where to go if I go wrong.
It obviously is a big day for you, but clearly it's a big day for you knowing that your family are around you. So I hope.
Yeah, the last day me and my wife stayed away anywhere was in our honeymoon.
Ha, really?
What do you hear this? I was 20 on a Thursday. I was married the following Thursday, the 2nd of April. And then my mum died 2 weeks just after that. I was the same day as well. And Joan and me came down to Dublin for 3 days honeymoon.
Well,
and we've never been anywhere since until last night. We're down in Dublin again. So this is what you call a second honeymoon as well.
Enjoy your day, Hugo. Enjoy it. And thanks for talking to us today.
Stephen,
thanks a lot. See you tonight on the TV.
I'm Gabriel Gatehouse, and from BBC Radio 4, this is Series 2 of The Coming Storm. There's a divide in American politics between those who think democracy is in peril and those who think it's already been subverted, hollowed out from the inside. As America prepares to elect its next president, we go through the looking glass into a world where nothing is as it seems, and the institutions of the state are a facade. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.